You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth!
Dave Hodges is as mad as hell, and he's not gonna take it anymore. Senses not so common. This is the Common Sense Show with Dave Hodges.
Well, good evening and welcome to another edition of the Common Sense Show, where we are freeing America one enslaved mind at a time. Hi, I'm your host, Dave Hodges, and this is the pre-Halloween Eve. Hallows Eve, where all of Satan's little friends go out and try to make friends or do whatever they do on Halloween. And I think, I feel like it's Halloween right now because so much is going on. It's just cloaked, people wearing masks, hidden agendas. It's crazy. We have a really good show for you tonight. In the first hour, of course, we have Doug Hagman, the Hagman and Hodges Hour here. And in just a moment, we'll be joined by someone from the Maricopa County area who is a postal employee and is going to help me further the claims I've made regarding election fraud here in Arizona, which is going on all over the country. Second hour, we're going to be joined by Bob Griswold, and does he have some information about what's going on, as does Doug. And the third hour, Mike Adams will be joining us, and we're going to talk about the current state of affairs. And wow, this is crazy. But anyway, before we get started, let me just mention that we are brought to you by Renaissance Precious Metals. And now's the time, folks. I mean, tomorrow should be the day, because this could happen in the blink of an eye. We could wake up tomorrow and the game's over. And I mean, things could unfold this quickly. Get your soon-to-be worthless cash, or at least as much as you can without needing operating capital. Get the bulk of it out, transfer it into precious metals. And to do that, give Steve a call tomorrow, 406-586-4842. Again, that's 406-586-4842. You're going to want to be healthy. GetTheTea.com. All kinds of products that'll clean you up, get you ready to go, will fix you up, and you can enjoy better health. And I've taken the tea, and I can tell you, it does clean you out and does actually help you lose weight if you've been eating some bad stuff. GetTheTea.com. And of course, if the bank's closed, do you think the just-in-time deliveries are going to continue? Of course they're not. So you're going to need to have storable food on hand for that. Go to Numana.com/Hodges. I'll have more to say on that a little later in the show. Man, oh man. I don't think I've been in such a frenzied state before when I've ever gone on the air. But here to join me and either to agitate me further or calm me down is my friend Doug Hagman, who has a great show here on the Global Star Radio Network from 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern, Monday through Friday. One of the most listened to shows out there. He outdraws Wolf Blitzer. I'm so happy I can always say that every week. And that's because he has more credibility than Wolf Blitzer in his little finger. Doug Hagman, welcome to the show.
Well, thanks, Dave. It's great to be here with you. Appreciate the opportunity to antagonize you further. How's that?
Well, friends don't always have to agree, and sometimes it's good to have point counterpoints, and we will hear shortly. But before we go to our secession question, in other words, what happens if Hillary's indicted after she wins, if she wins, I just want to set a little background here before we go to our first guest who asked to remain anonymous, and those reasons will be clear when you hear the story. But this past week on Channel 3, which is our independent, and their news is the number one news in Arizona, who's kind of forsaken the corporate news in favor of Channel 3, but they ran a story at 6 a.m. on Thursday about the voter fraud in the machines. And they showed how when you put in a straight line Republican ticket or a Trump ticket vote, it came out as Hillary Clinton. And they made a big deal about it, but they let a Democrat come on at the end, and with absolutely no substantiation and no proof whatsoever, the Democrat says, well, it's happening both ways. Well, there was no proof. No, it's not happening both ways. You showed no proof, Democratic Party of Arizona. The fact is George Soros' machines have been positioned here in Arizona to commit massive voter fraud. I also have evidence that's been presented to me, and I'm hoping that this person will develop a conscience. And, of course, where do you go? The question I was asked, this person is an elector, and they've been offered $150,000 if Clinton doesn't win the election here in Arizona to throw their vote. And I have more detail on that we'll get into. The source who brought this to me is someone who I know well and have known for a long time and who has political connections. So no question that this is real and this is going on right here. But I think the most amazing story involves ballot stuffing here in the state of Arizona, where we have 3.4 million people officially registered, but the news went nuts yesterday saying, hey guys, it's up to 3.6 million. On to talk to us about it is someone we'll call Anonymous, and he's a postal employee. And Anonymous, welcome to the show, and fill us in. What kind of numbers have you seen with regard to voter, early ballot voter totals?
Well, thank you, Dave. Thank you. Well, Tuesday, October 11th, 1.2 million early ballots came in. And that's at the main post office, downtown Phoenix. We canceled the mail for the whole state. And then 3 days later, another 1.5 million came in. So that's 2.7 million early ballots. And what I found strange about that was in 2012, In 2012, we only cast 2.26 million votes, 2.25 million votes for the whole state. Mm-hmm. 1.2 million went to Mitt Romney, and 1,025,000 went to Obama. So we have more absentee ballots than votes were cast last election, 4 year cycle. And another thing was from FloridaPolitics.com, 2012, they had 1.8 million early ballots. In 2016, this year, they had 2.7 million ballots, the same as us. So someone's really doing their homework and footwork getting people to sign up for early ballots. Because at the post office, we make sure that they're delivered, and if they can't be delivered to that person at that address, they're returned and made note that there's no one at that address and shredded.
Okay, so I want to just kind of wrap up the numbers here. First of all, if you get 60% out for a general election, you're in record-setting territory. And when you talk about 2.7 million, and I'm going to go with a figure not reported in the media yesterday with all their hype and frenzy connected to this, but I'm going to go to the number that's on the Arizona Secretary of State homepage, in which they say that the number of voters in Arizona is 3.4 million. Well, 2.7 million is almost 80% of 3.4 million. In other words, what we're saying here is 80% of the people in Arizona have already voted by early ballot. That is not believable. Doug, do you agree with that? That is not believable for any election.
Oh, yeah. I mean, just by virtue of the history and the numbers, of course. Yeah. I mean,
exactly.
it doesn't make sense.
No, it doesn't. And what it shows to me is ballot stuffing. Anonymous, before we let you go, because Doug and I've got a number of issues we got to get to, but before I let you go, I want to know, are your fellow employees also stunned by these numbers?
Yes, we've never seen this many ballots, including the bosses. We've never seen this much traffic coming through on the election.
Boy, I better tell you, these people doing this better hope that Trump doesn't get in, because there are going to be a whole lot of people going to prison. Hey, well, look, I want to thank you from the bottom of my heart for having the courage to come on. I know this is not easy for you to do, but I thank you for caring enough about your country to come forward.
Yes, I just want to see a fair election. Everyone has a right
as
to
we
vote
all do.
Once.
Yeah, vote early, vote often should be the motto here in Arizona. Mm-hmm. Okay, Anonymous, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Well, Doug, there you have it. And, you know, he probably would have let me use his name. I kind of made that decision unilaterally because this is not the time to be going out. I'm going to say this publicly. You know, I shared this with Steve Quayle yesterday. I got a death threat yesterday, and that's not the first time. I know it certainly won't be the last time, but it was over this issue. So I think certainly people need to exercise caution when they're coming out. Doug, where do you want to start? We've got a whole smorgasbord of topics.
Well, there's obviously there's no limits to what we can talk about. Definitely the 650,000 emails that were found on Anthony Weiner's, sorry about saying that, his computers is notable. It's also notable, I just want to punch this out there early right now, with the NYPD slash, well, the task force that's investigating Anthony Weiner, the sexting scandal that overlapped into the email issue, email criminal investigation. They also took the router. Okay, now that's very important. I don't know how, I don't know if that information is out there. They took Huma Abedin slash Anthony Weiner's router, and that's important to keep for everyone to keep in the back of their minds, because that will come into play later on. But you know, if you want to talk about the eligibility, the chaos that's seemingly going to erupt if a candidate dies or is otherwise, you know, taken out of the picture before election day, we can do that too, because you and I were talking about that earlier, and I don't think we agree, but let's rock. What do you think?
Okay, well, let's start where we agree on.
Okay.
I know you've got to be aware that Paul Ryan made himself eligible to run for president on January 30th of 2016.
Yes.
Okay, so we agree on that. So at this moment,
absolutely,
we're still friends. Okay. All right.
All right.
I discovered this in early April. And to be honest with you, I was so focused on the Clinton Foundation selling uranium to the Russians based on the New York Times article that I kind of lost my focus there on Ryan for a few weeks. But I came out with a story and I said, you know, it's interesting. Ryan's not campaigning. He's not officially in the primary. Maybe that's because it's going to be a contested primary. And I floated the idea that Ryan may come out of this whole thing being the presidential candidate. And that's what I thought was going to happen at the convention before Trump started to run away with things. Now, cycle forward. Here's where, Doug, I think we lock horns and disagree. If Clinton is elected by hook or crook, and listen, every source I trust and talk to and view, you know, Trump is going to win 60, 70, 75%. But that doesn't account for the voter machines in 16 states, most of them swing states. And that doesn't account for the ballot stuffing that we just heard about right here in Arizona. And all the other dual registrations the Democrats are doing, 7 million of them in adjacent states, and dead people voting in Colorado, California, and Illinois. But let's get right down to brass tacks. If Clinton steals this election, and she manages to get herself elected, but then Comey comes back and issues an indictment for Hillary Clinton, it's my understanding that she is ineligible to continue just based on the indictment alone.
Okay, yeah, this is where I think you and I disagree, because first of all, the FBI merely said that they're reopening their investigation to examine the 650,000 new emails resident on, or at least the email, whatever you'd call them, not the entire emails, but the notification of emails resident on the machines at the Abedin, Weiner household. Okay, so But having said that, they have yet to determine whether the emails actually have any evidence of criminal activity, let alone decide whether or not to prosecute. So I don't think it's highly unlikely that an indictment would come before November 8th. And we've got a couple of dates here. November 8th is election day. Then you've got the meeting of the Electoral College in December. And then you've got the inauguration. So technically, and somebody who wins the election at the day it's decided, we'll say just for simplicity, it's November 8th, it's decided. You've got to go until the meeting of the Electoral College before that person can be considered a viable candidate. Once that Electoral College meets and they nominate or they certify the election results, then that person is the president-elect at that point in time. And then from there, we have Inauguration Day. But any time before that, this is kind of a critical period, and this is where a potential constitutional crisis could come into play. And I did a YouTube video on our channel that addresses this. However, even if, we'll just say, if an indictment does happen, it would not mean that Clinton could no longer run. An indictment is only an accusation. It is not a conviction. All right, now, hold that thought, because that would take a lot of breath away, of course, from Clinton and the Clinton candidacy. Now, again, an indictment is far different than a conviction. It does not disqualify a person from being eligible for the presidency. Neither does a conviction technically. However, jail would probably be a little bit problematic to take the oath in the office. So should Clinton be indicted after winning the election but before officially taking office, she could, in theory, try to play beat the clock, hope to take office before the case concludes. Once a person is in office as president, it gets even more complicated. However, should Clinton be indicted and convicted, which is not going to happen prior to inauguration, and end up in jail, then she can be deemed incapacitated, in which Section 3 of the 20th Amendment kicks in, and then Vice President-elect, in this case Tim Kaine, would become president. So I don't know where we have a disagreement here. It could be between the Electoral College and the inauguration. I'm not sure.
Well, that's where the controversy comes in. Does the vote take place to, well, let's put it this way. Can she be declared ineligible by the Electoral College if she's been indicted? The answer is, yeah, they can cast their vote any way they want. That's one thing I've learned, and that's a matter of just practicality, not law. But, and I agree with you about Section 3 on the 20th Amendment. In fact, some people, and I'm going to grant you this, Doug, there are some people, and I agree, say that Tim Kaine could fulfill Hillary's place, even if she's indicted and jailed before the inauguration. But then I've got another camp that says, no, they have to be sworn in before the order of secession takes place, and that's where Paul Ryan could become the president, because he's the Speaker of the House. And that goes back to, why did he file paperwork on January 30th to make himself eligible to be president?
You know, I believe that was purely a Karl Rove move on the part of Paul Ryan. And there was some hubbub here last week, you know, this Ryan Pence website. I don't know whether, I think you covered, I can't remember anymore, it's all just a blur, but, you know, all this, you know, Ryan's going to step in and replace Trump, not replace Clinton, but replace Trump. And then, of course, for whatever reason, I don't recall the reason. I think it was during the time that when Trump was under fire for whatever the tape from 2005. But having said all of that, how do we go? And I'm asking you this: how do we go from Clinton Kaine to Paul Ryan? In what universe is that? Okay, of course, look at the universe now. So, but how do we get there?
Let's go to where there is no dispute. Clinton and Kaine get inaugurated, and the show, what is it called, Designated Survivor incident takes place, and the government is basically wiped out. That's a new series on one of the networks. And let's say that Kaine and Clinton are either dead or incapacitated, but Ryan survives, and technically at that point, he's still the Speaker of the House. The order of secession would hand him the presidency. That part...
But then, I get that, but to have Paul Ryan, you know, file paperwork to become to be in the running for president, really, it's a moot point even today.
It's a moot
right?
point. For, yeah, I agree. For the order of secession, it's a moot point. But what if, you know, now we get into all kinds of possibilities. What if Clinton steps down? What if Paul Ryan is drafted by whoever to come in? And I'm not saying for the Democratic Party, but now he throws his hat in the ring. But let's back up. I'm getting ahead of myself. If Clinton withdraws before the election, for whatever reason, there will be a delay in the election. And I interviewed a gentleman yesterday whose interview is coming out tomorrow on the website. He's an elector in the state of Texas, and I asked him that question. And he said specifically that there are two fail-safe dates. One of them he thought was the second Tuesday in December, and the other has to occur prior to, I think it's January 3rd, which is prior to the inauguration. So they have two dates that they can postpone.
Right. January 3rd, Dave, is the date when Congress reconvenes and is sworn in. And if I can interrupt you, and you're right, because you have to look back in history, and let's just assume the death of a candidate. Let's assume Clinton is somehow just vapor locks, okay? Assumes room temperature, so to speak. Has that ever happened before in the course of U.S. history? Well, there were two instances that I found, two situations of candidate deaths that happened, but neither really had any type of catastrophic impact. One was in 1872 when presidential candidate Horace Greeley, he died about 3 weeks after winning nearly 44% of the popular vote as a liberal Republican supported by Democrats. Now, he was running against Grant. Oh, boy. The presidential electors chose between various alternatives at that time, but because Greeley lost, his death really didn't sway the election's outcome. Then we had James Sherman, who died, I think it was six or about a week before the 1912 general election. He was not replaced on the ballots, and the matter was rendered moot by the GOP's crushing defeat anyway. But I go back to the writings of an author. His name is, Akil Reed Amar. He wrote an article in 1994 in the Arkansas Law Review, just going over all potentialities, all possibilities of having problems with the presidential election. And at that time, he said, look, we better address this because one of these days something like this could happen. And he writes that there's really nothing in the Constitution that requires a popular election for the electors serving in the Electoral College, meaning to say that it's up to each state legislature to decide how they want to choose the state's electors. And the state's electors, of course, are the ones who sit in the Electoral College and choose a candidate. But both parties, I just want to mention this, have rules for presidential ticket replacements, however.
Right.
And Congress does have the power to change the election date under Article 2 of the Constitution, which we could perhaps potentially see a sitting president well beyond the January 20th inauguration date in this case. It would be very interesting.
That's not interesting. That's frightening.
Well, frightening indeed, because Congress is up against a de facto December deadline, as your source had said, as the Constitution's 20th Amendment requires that congressional terms expire January 3rd and presidential terms expire on January 20th. So, well, although it's conceivable to split the elections, you know, from the legislative elections and from the presidential elections, they happen really at the same time on November 8th and this year. So, if the entire general election were to be moved after January 3rd, Congress would effectively have voted themselves out of office. We would have no government. So it's like a non-starter. And again, I go back to the writings of Akil Reed Amar, who in 1994 article in the law, Arkansas Law Review, where he even cites the possibility of a special presidential election being pushed to after January 20th with the Speaker of the House. Now, this goes to what you're saying, Paul Ryan in this case, serving as acting president until an election could pick up a real president for the remainder of the term. But in this case, this law, this legal scholar felt that scenario is pretty far-fetched. But now we're saying, hey, wait a minute, maybe not. And maybe this is, was the intent all along. I don't know. But it's we're certainly in some murky water here with the, I mean, how dare the Clintons put this country in a position of a potential constitutional crisis like this, or Comey, or Lynch, or any of the people inside the Beltway? I guess that's the bigger question, and that's what really, really makes I'm pretty peeved about that.
Well, I agree.
I could say something different, but, you know, yeah, I'm really hacked off about that. How they, I mean, you talk about the hubris behind these people, the criminality, and the facilitation of the same by Comey and Lynch. And Comey, of course, you and I know, and we agree on this, that the FBI, there's really a mutiny inside the FBI. Comey is depressed about all of the resignations of the agents, good agents and such. Hell, there are numerous department heads that walk by him in the morning, according to my source, who won't even say hello to him in the morning. That's the environment at the FBI.
I'm just debating. Well, I'm going to put... I'm censoring myself here just for the moment, but I Doug, I agree. And actually, we're a lot closer in agreement than I thought we would be when the show started in terms of the only issue of contention, and I think the stronger argument falls in your camp, but I think the only issue of contention, if Hillary is indicted, can she continue? And that's...
But man, really, is that even... I mean, for crying out loud, I can't even imagine an indictment in, what, 9 days, 8 days from now? 9 days? Really?
I mean, no, I'm talking you? About after the election, if she is elected.
I mean, the speed of Washington, man.
Oh, I know. Listen, I don't know. We're in agreement. But let me get down to another thing. I interviewed somebody this morning, they're keeping their real name out of things. And Stuart Rhodes brought this person to me, and Stuart Rhodes of Oathkeepers, of course, and who need to be congratulated because they're going out undercover to do election watching. And I'm so glad that somebody, some organization's taking it upon themselves formally to do this. But he had me interview someone, and, you know, if it quacks like a duck, walks like a duck, you know, and this guy sounded like a constitutional lawyer. And he's actually closer to you in belief about Clinton continuing, but he also thinks that what I raised about 10 days ago on the Common Sense Show in an article, that the Supreme Court could decide this case, and he went right to Broward County with those questionable ballots that were mailed out, and they didn't correct it properly. He said, unless Florida suspends its election results and fully corrects the problem, which they still haven't done, that's appealable to the Supreme Court. Now, if Florida fixes it, he said whoever would bring a case would not have standing. Now, if this goes to the Supreme Court, and Doug, this is where this gets really, really hairy. And people say, oh, that couldn't happen. Really? Al Gore, George Bush? It happened before.
Sure.
What do you think about Supreme Court involvement? Have you thought about that at all?
Probably have to dig Scalia back up again. You know, well, seriously, if that happens, I mean, we're pretty much toast at that point anyway, in my view. I don't think this country could stand that kind of internal stress. I mean, look at where we're at right now. Look at the environment. Look at the headline. Look at the election fatigue that everyone is feeling right now. It's there are two really opposite and decisively opposing camps right now. This country has been split in half by these globalist bastards. And I'm sorry for swearing, but no, I'm not sorry. I mean, this country has been split in half by these globalists, by the individuals who the snowflakes, the rainbow coalition, these metrosexual idiots out there that, you know, whose IQ are match the room temperature. I mean, come on. You know, the gimme that's the handout entitled generation, the millennials who are deluded into thinking that Clinton slash Obama Clinton is going to just carry the day. It's these people against the people who really know, you know, what's going on, the criminality behind it. Well, we your first anonymous guest there, what he said about the ballot stuffing, how rigged the system is. And it is rigged. The entire system is rigged, and everyone knows it, but hardly anybody inside the Beltway has the testosterone to do anything about it, because we've been neutered down and we've been pushed down and we've been told we can't fight City Hall, and that's a damnable, contemptible lie. We can fight City Hall, and we better start if we want to take this country back. Sorry.
Oh, that was well said. Unfortunately, I don't think America feels the crisis enough through enough of its people to respond in the manner in which you suggest. It won't be until people can't put food on their table and shoes on their kids' feet are the people who really matter, the statistical majority, Doug, and they're not going to do anything yet.
Yeah. No. And everyone is looking at Comey and saying, well, this is a political move. Yeah, it is a political move. Or saying, oh, Comey finally is coming, you know, trying to salvage his career. Yeah, it's all of that. The backstory is important. I mean, Comey announced back on July 5th that the Department of Justice would not indict Hillary Clinton for failure to safeguard her email, all right, when she was Secretary of State. Well, he set in motion a series of events that he did not intend necessarily to set in motion. Now, the question is, what caused his announcement here on this past week on Friday? Did he let the FBI become subservient to some political agenda? Well, I'm not too sure about that. I mean, that could be part of it, but I don't think it's all of it. I think it's more. I think Comey has been presented with evidence, not proof, but evidence of criminality on the part of both Huma Abedin and Hillary Clinton. And I do believe the word treason here could very well be used, because from my source that I spoke with this weekend, whatever they found, it had to be so significant that after, I mean, it couldn't be hidden. It so significant it could not be hidden. That's what it would have to do with state secrets and mishandling of state secrets. Don't forget, Huma Abedin, folks, is an agent for the Muslim Sisterhood, Muslim Brotherhood, whatever you prefer. And to have state classified state documents, State Department documents, on any device of a sexual predator, of a pedophile, an accused pedophile, how's that? Meaning Anthony Weiner. For crying out loud, what, I mean, is that reckless or is that careless? Which is, by the way, the definition of how you would decide essentially treason, I guess, espionage, theft of government property, obstruction of justice, whatever you want to, whatever charge, the standard would be, were they reckless or were they careless? Or was it intentional? And I would say that based on everything I've seen and heard, especially from my source, there was an intent here to share classified information by Huma to foreign interests. Whether that was known by Clinton, I don't know. But the fact of the matter is that the stuff that was resident on and is resident on Weiner's computer and used, and that's why the router is so important, because the router will identify every device that is hooked into the network, the wireless network and the wired network on Huma Abedin's and Anthony Weiner's network. So that's why they took the router too, and I think people need to really know that and drill down on that, because it's not just about the computers; it's about the router as well. But I didn't want to dominate here the conversation. But
no, you're doing fine.
I mean,
Doug, let me throw this
ahead.
In, because I think what I'm going to give to you parallels what you're saying. Aaron Klein, oh gosh, and I'm sorry, I don't remember the exact time frame now, but it was when Benghazi exploded for a second time in terms of being a controversy, and he sent out emails before these emails got purged and withheld, and in several of the emails, and I published them on the Common Sense Show, Hillary Clinton was, from her server, was transmitting the travel plans for Ambassador Stevens prior to his death. Now, some of this goes back to as long as a year before but it was common practice. And I'll tell you, I'll put my conspiracy theory hat on here, Doug. I think Hillary Clinton was establishing a pattern of doing so. So within that, she did communicate to the people who would kill him to silence him because he was becoming a risk to re-election for Obama because things were leaking out about the gun running and the drug running to raise money for people, Al-Qaeda in Libya, to overthrow Gaddafi. When that happened, she had established a pattern. But it's absolutely clear in Aaron Klein's distribution list that Hillary Clinton was doing this. Well, I looked into this, Doug. And I've talked to a State Department employee, and I said, is this common? She said, it's a felony. It's a felony to do this.
Yep.
And yeah. You're talking about on the router with Wiener, there's treason. I'm telling you there's complicity to commit murder on the part of Hillary Clinton.
You know, I think that that's a pretty good possibility here that the findings of this, and one can argue, people will say, well, wait a minute, the Comey through the letter said, we don't know exactly, we don't even know what the emails are about, we just know their emails. Well, don't give me that. They know exactly what's on that computer. Even 650,000 emails, they've got programs where they can sort out, identify things through keyword searches and such, so they know exactly what's there. Yeah, I believe Benghazi is involved in this. And that's what you're referring to, the 9/11 2012 attack on the two CIA compounds in Benghazi, Libya.
Right.
I believe that that's because and the Hillary Clinton's time during that period, where was she? What was she doing? What was Obama doing during that period? Really never satisfactorily answered. Yeah, I know what they've said, but do we have any, you know, timestamps to prove what they were doing? So yeah, I do suspect that Benghazi in particular could be very front and center on this particular issue. One more thing I also heard from my source, and this, take it for what it's worth, when you're talking about 650,000 emails, that comes out to about 178 a day, one every 7 or 8 minutes, 24/7 for a period of 10 years. So this would also, could perhaps also cover the time of Fast and Furious as well, the gun running operation. Now, is there anything with respect to Fast and Furious on there? I know different people, a whole different time. I understand that, but could there be some overlap there? That was kind of brought up to say, you know, hey, because of this administration's or regime's position on the southern border, on the Clinton Foundation, with respect to what you've uncovered, there could be some overlap here. So let's not dismiss that possibility as well.
Doug, did you read the email that I posted today on the website from the DEA agent?
I did. Yes. Yes.
What was your initial reaction?
Well, I mean, I don't find any of this difficult to believe. I think that you've got a solid source there. I believe that the source knows exactly what's taking place. You've reported on this before. In fact,
yes.
You've been reporting on this back 2 years, 2.5 years ago. The very same contents that's being verified to you now. But America's in trouble. We've been taken over from within, and this is proof of that.
For the audience's sake, you know, don't run up to the website now. Let me just summarize the germane part, and I think Bob Griswold and I will probably take it apart more in the next hour because that relates more closely to what he's talking about than what Doug and I are speaking about now. But effectively, what he said in one part of this is he believes that he said he knows the Clintons have stepped on the wrong toes in international drug trafficking, and the Clinton Foundation is the target of a hostile takeover, and this is the first move in this direction. And then the person went on to say, and this is a DEA agent, and let me tell you, I've confirmed this 2.5 years ago. I know the person. I know this person fairly well. And what this person confirms for me is he said, World War III will likely start in Syria. I'm kind of paraphrasing here. But then he went on to say, but we would make a mistake if we didn't consider that there are factions lining up along drug trafficking corridors that will be part of this conflict, and their main motivation, according to his implication, will be drug trafficking because it supposedly now is the number one traded commodity in the world. Doug, do you have anything from your sources on this?
Just confidence. information, anything I would say would be redundant, I suppose. Pretty much what you said, what he said. I will say that I guess I would add that one of the reasons why we took over, changed the regimes in North Africa, and that includes Libya, is to facilitate both the drugs and the sex trafficking. And I know people are going to find this very difficult to believe, but that's the way it is. I mean, you know, we have to all put our big boy pants on and grow up and understand that there's drugs and sex that the government's involved in.
Well, yeah, I agree. I'm hesitating because I'm thinking how to word this so I don't say the wrong thing. But let me cut right to the chase. The bottom line is Hillary Clinton has fallen into disfavor. Do you think that statement is true with regard to the global elite?
Yes. Yes, absolutely. And more, and I'm getting, even as we speak, I'm getting kind of confirmation of that. There's this need to get her. There's this dislike, not just disfavor, but a dislike, both her and Bill at this point, that has to do with their money dealings with the Clinton Foundation. It's kind of like when you've got to think of this as an organized crime racket, and you've got somebody that's really cheating the cheaters, I guess. That's what they're doing, and they're keeping too much money for themselves, so they're ripping off the house.
Well,
the house being the global.
Every day, I wrote this a couple months ago, every day the Clintons are in the public eye, and she's running for president, is another day of exposure to the criminality of the global elite because of her connections to them.
Right. Agreed.
And that's, yeah. I, well,
that's a problem, and especially at this point with this with the globalists pulling the strings here, and you've got the Clinton Foundation, which, by the way, there is a criminal investigation into the Clinton Foundation. Not that that's going to go anywhere, but just the existence of that. Come on, people. You know. However. And nothing, I'll say this, nothing happens in Washington that is not scripted, and even to the extent of Donald Trump. Do you think for a moment that Donald Trump would be sucking air if the globalists didn't want or didn't feel that? I mean, he exists in the position where he's at because the globalists either have pretty much resigned themselves to the fact that, okay, we can't get rid of this guy, so we can best we could do is control him. And if we can't control him now, maybe once he gets in the White House, we can control him. And if that doesn't work, then we'll go with Plan B or Plan C. You know. So, but everything that we're seeing, I believe, and especially on the Democratic side, especially on the progressive side, has already been scripted by the globalists, by the Soros people, by the people even above Soros and the colleagues of Soros.
And that's who I presume is angry at Clinton. Let me share this with you, and I don't know if you got a chance to see or hear this, but when Gary Haven, producer of the movie Amerigeddon, successful businessman in his own right, and this goes back a week, where he told me in an interview I did with him, that he has spent $12 million of his own money, he's using three planes, he was the only person at one time that was bringing in supplies to the Haitian refugees. And then it got personal, Doug. He said, the Clintons have absconded with $2 billion of Haitian relief money. And then later he was interviewed by Joe Biggs on InfoWars, and he looked right in the camera, and he said, Hillary Clinton, you are a monster, and he called her out with the same exact allegation. Now, there is also information out there, and I want to see if you can either confirm or disconfirm this. You got $2 billion here that the Clinton Foundation's absconded with, and then we have reports that $1.8 billion has been sent to Qatar in the Clinton Foundation name, and Qatar has no extradition agreement with the United States. I think you see where I'm going with this. Do you know anything about this?
Sure. Well, if I can back up, if we can just stay on the topic of Haiti for a moment, just so people, just to remind people, Haiti suffered a 7.0 earthquake, earthquake back in, it was January 12th of 2010, so now it's, what, almost 7 years ago. And that was just 16 miles west of Port-au-Prince. There were, I mean, what was it? I think 100,000 people were dead, and 250,000 displaced, or perhaps that might be an overstatement, but at least 250,000 displaced, and perhaps 100,000 dead. I'm not entirely certain, but it was a huge deal. And of course, enter the Clintons, and for all the talk about what the Clinton Foundation did for the people of Haiti, that's just a bunch of crap, because they didn't do anything. They engaged in what's known as disaster capitalism. It's the process of self-enrichment. They used the Clinton Foundation to set up things like set up companies or assist companies like VCS Mining, which had little experience in gold mining, but they actually created this gold mining company and allowed it they got the Haitian government to grant them licenses so they could do the mining in the north part of Haiti. What does that have to do with an earthquake? And it's got nothing to do with an earthquake, but they did all of this under the auspices of the Clinton Foundation. And of course, on the board of directors, they put Tony Rodham, which is Hillary Clinton's brother, yes, on the board. Okay. And then you've got the Caracol Corporation, which they spent, I think it was $124 million to put this industrial park in, again, the north part of Haiti, to create 60,000 jobs. And what happened was it only created 5,000 jobs, had no effect on the people affected by the earthquake, and it only benefited the big retail manufacturers or big retail places like Target and Gap and such. And they brought in Koreans, actually, to make the products. But that was a $124 million cluster, you know what, the infrastructure. They did nothing at all except enrich themselves via the Clinton Foundation. And every time that she opens her mouth saying 90%, you know, actually gets spent on charities, no, it's not even close to that. I think it's like 2.6%. Perhaps you can even go a little bit higher and say 5% goes to charities. Be generous, but certainly it's the opposite of what she's saying. So, you know, that's to me, that is the disaster capitalism, self-enrichment, criminal enterprise that really best reflects Hillary Clinton and Bill Clinton. But having said that, where did you go after that? I kind of lost my place.
Well, no, and then history repeating itself now, because as Gary Haven was saying, the Clinton Foundation and the latest crisis on the peninsula, containing 1.4 million Haitians without water, electricity, food. Some are still stranded on mountaintops because the waters haven't fully receded. That Gary was the only one for quite some time bringing in the supplies, and it was dangerous. His plane was mobbed, and he faced all kinds of dangers. Had to hire a security patrol to
sure.
stay with him at all times.
Yeah.
And now that he's calling out the Clintons, he better have an army. But when you look at the Clintons, he said, Dave, they're getting paid to be here, and they're nowhere in sight. Neither is the United Nations.
Well, it's interesting, as I've talked to Gary Haven, and we've had him on our show a couple of times now, and he's right. The international contributions to the Haitians amounts to about $13 billion, which is the largest the handout or the package, assistance package, by the international community in the Western Hemisphere. And it's the official role of the U.S. Department of State to manage that $13 billion. And that was overseen by Cheryl Mills through, that was actually via USAID money. So it all goes back to the Clinton Foundation, and the distribution of funds from or via USAID, via Cheryl Mills and the Clinton Foundation. So all of this, you're exactly right, and Gary Haven is correct. None of the money contributed is going for infrastructure or has gone for infrastructure. The places down there around Port-au-Prince, Haiti. People, actually 9,000 deaths from cholera just in the past year alone, because there's no running water, there's no sewage systems. It's been unchanged since the earthquake. Where in the hell's all this money gone? And it goes right back to the Clintons, their criminality, and how dare that woman get up and say that the Clinton Foundation is, you know, a philanthropic organization. It is nothing more than a criminal enterprise.
I couldn't agree with you more. Let's turn this into the second part of what I brought up. What do you know about allegedly $1.8 billion being transferred to Qatar in what would presumably be a getaway for the Clintons in case Hillary's indicted or going to be convicted?
Well, you know, there's been talk of this for quite a long time, okay? The $1.8 billion to Qatar Central Bank. You know, I would caution everyone on kind of taking to heart everything that they hear. On the other hand, I would also watch the movements of people like Huma Abedin, in particular Huma Abedin, for example, because she lived 16 years, I mean, from age 2 to age 18, she lived in Saudi Arabia. Now, I was checking on extradition treaties. I don't believe Saudi Arabia and the United States have any extradition agreements at all. I would be looking more towards some of, not necessarily the Clintons, but some of the people in their orbit are on the periphery of maybe getting kind of flying the coop and going over to Saudi or going over to Qatar. You know, because they're all part of this crime family, so to speak. But I would, you know, I don't know, and I would not put it past any of the globalists to start making their bed outside of the United States and out of reach of the criminal justice system, especially if Trump gets in. But even if Trump does get in, the wheels of justice, as we've seen, move awful slow. And can he untangle this mess? And I mean, it is a mess. Can he untangle this mess, even in the 4 years that he might be given, or whatever time he might be given? Can he do it? I don't know.
That is an excellent point, Doug. He's going to have to appoint an army of special prosecutors, and not the one he indicated that he was going to take down Hillary with. And
watch Giuliani. Giuliani's going to.
Well, he'll do some
of it. Rudy Giuliani knows where the bodies are buried, and I have a feeling that Giuliani is going to be playing a very important part, and has. I would suspect that Rudy Giuliani, by the way, for the sake of the listeners, has played a very important part in what we're seeing take place right now with the server, with the email stuff. But watch him if Trump does succeed in winning this election, watch him for a high position within the Department of Justice. Just want to say that. That's kind of what I'm hearing through the grapevine.
Well, I think that would... let me ask you this. What do you think about Newt Gingrich? Is he going to get a cabinet post?
Wow.
Assuming Trump wins.
I hope not.
That's my feeling, too.
I hope not. I mean, you know, look... Newt's a globalist. He isn't, but he's a cheap globalist in my view. I don't like the man. Of course, a lot of people say that about me. So, but I don't like him because I do believe that he is a globalist first and cares about our country second. So, and only when pushed into a corner or for optics will he, you know, kind of go after like Megyn Kelly, you know, the low hanging fruit on the tree.
Yeah, exactly.
You know?
Do you remember the video that ran with Newt Gingrich was confronted at a book signing about his role in? Oh gosh, what is the place where they go party with the kids?
Bohemian Grove.
Thank you.
That,
yeah, I just drew a mental blank here, but do you remember that? And he just went off on. Remember that piece?
Yeah, there were a couple of people in that same time period. He was one. I think Juergen was another. And yeah I do. Look, they're all perverts. You know, the Lolita Express with Bill Clinton. I mean, look where we're at right now. Who'd have thought back in the 90s one Clinton was taken down because of a vagina? Sorry about that. And another one in the current year is almost taken down because of a, well, you know, the counterpart to that. Folks, you can fill in the blanks, of course. I'm being kind of facetious here, but look at the perversion that we're seeing within the Beltway. I guess that's a better, more tactful way of saying it. Look at everything we're seeing in terms of the perversion, and look at the exposure, no pun intended there, that is resulting. It's consequential to the perversion that they've, in which they've engaged.
Less than 9 days to go. Do we have an election?
Break up the diazepam or Valium or whatever it's called. You know, for the country needs a shot of Valium, I guess, to get through this, or so it seems. But you know, don't take your eyes, or don't be. And I would urge everyone not to really be mesmerized by the headlines. The headlines, I think, are distracting, and they are designed to take your eyes off of what's really important. Look beyond the headlines. Look below the headlines. Look through the headlines, because we're being gamed here like we've never been gamed before. Absolutely, sir.
Well, big time, I think right now the next 8 days are the most dangerous time for a false flag in America's history.
Oh,
there's never been a moment.
You know what? I agree. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry, I didn't mean to over talk you. Yeah, I totally agree. And Dave, I think you had talked about this early on this year about this. And isn't it interesting? Here we are with 9 days to go. That. Just about everything you've talked about, Steve Quayle has talked about in your program, and our program, is really kind of coming to pass. We're seeing this, we're seeing this race to the finish line, and there is one hell of a fight between the globalists and the people who want to see this country made whole again.
That's why I agree with Mike Adams, and we'll hear him in the third hour, that we're not getting out of this without a fight. Doug, tell everyone how they can get a copy of your book.
Thanks, Dave. You're very, very kind. Yeah, I wrote a book. It's actually based on a true story of the murder of my uncle. I investigated that back in the 80s. You can go to Amazon.com. The book title is Stained by Blood, or you can go to stainedbyblood.com, and if you want, just fill in the on the top right there, you'll see a space where you can order it, and I'll sign it for you and get it out to you. Stainedbyblood.com or Amazon.com for Stained by Blood. Appreciate that, brother.
Okay, flip a coin. Do you think we have an election?
Yeah, I do. I don't see anything happening between now and the election in terms of any one candidate. You'd have to physically remove Hillary from any position. She's not going to go quietly unless something happens to her health-wise. And Trump, I think, is they're not going to touch him because of the optics surrounding that. So I think we're going to have an election. But I think the entire legitimacy of the election, regardless of who wins, will be cast in doubt. And I believe that is the intent of the globalists. We are now officially a third-world country.
Boy, is that well said. Doug, my friend, you outdid yourself tonight. This was probably the quickest hour we've ever had on the Common Sense Show. Our thanks to the anonymous postal worker for coming on and validating those numbers. Doug, thanks so much. And we'll have the election, pre-election special next week with you, Joe, and Steve Quayle. Can't wait.
Yeah, Steve's excited about it, and I am too. It'll be great.
Okay. Thanks, Doug. Doug Hagman, ladies and gentlemen.
Thanks, Bob.
Catch a show for 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time. We'll be back in hour number two with Bob Griswold.